Okay, hey there, everybody. Welcome to Little Wars, heard only on the Right Wing Entertainment Squad's radio network, your guiding light into degeneracy. I am your host, Mongoose, and with me today, I'm interviewing Titus of Tales from the Trough fame and among other sundry exercises. I'm not exactly sure what exactly he's up to right now because he hasn't released anything recently, super recently, unless I'm unaware, so I'll leave him to say that. But how you doing, Titus?
I'm doing well, Mongoose. Thank you for having me on. And I think in terms of recent content, we had a collective case of writer's block for January, but Tales from the Trough will be out in February. I have working on two stories presently, so should be a good episode.
All right. So, insofar as we're concerned here, Titus is a Magic the Gathering guy, or he was into it, and he's kind of casually into it now. So, if we could just get into that now, I think that'd probably be a good avenue for discussion.
Sure. Yeah. So, just I think my sort of experience with Magic the Gathering would probably mirror pretty much everyone else's experience with Magic the Gathering. You had I had an older cousin who was super into it. He's Gen X, or I'm a millennial, so he's a few years older than me. And as he was sort of getting out of it, I was sort of, you know, seventh, eighth grade, starting to get into card games. And he gave me all of his cards. So that was my sort of entry into Magic. I played super casual with my friends. I never really went to like the card stores for tournaments and stuff. I went to one. I didn't do well, and that just sort of solidified the fact that, hey, I'm not going to take this too seriously. I got into it as a kid, 13, 14, got out of it like during high school. And when Ravnica came back, I think this must have been in 2013, I was hanging out with a few friends who also played. And that's when I got back into it. Sort of had a second wind for me.
Ravnica was actually when I got into the game, when Ravnica came back, Return to Ravnica.
Okay. Yeah. Return to Ravnica.
That and Scars of Mirrodin are probably my two favorite blocks. I mean, that's really when I got into the game personally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think it's the game at its best. I never really liked the three-color combination cards. I've always found them to be, I don't know, like overly complicated, and I never really liked the style of gameplay. I'm much more in favor of just, you know, two color combinations. They have an interesting mechanic and sort of go from there. I definitely like, you know, flavor and stuff like that, which is usually, it accounts for something, right? Ravnica, Innistrad, what was the one after Return of Ravnica would have been, I think, the Greek God one, which I played a little bit of too.
That would have been Theros, I believe.
Theros, yeah. So that was a pretty good, year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Magic moves fast. It's
Yeah. But I didn't want to, like, I spent, you know, during that time, I built pretty decent decks. They were pretty competitive. But I didn't want to keep on spending money. So the people who I was playing with at the time, we all just sort of collectively, decided to move to EDH instead of Standard or Modern. I pretty much kind of did what my cousin did, just sort of got rid of all of my extra cards. I kept my Commander decks. I have three of them. And they're sort of based off of the Return to Ravnica block. I have a Orzhov Bleeder deck, an Azorius Blue-White Control, and a Boros Red and White Weenie deck. I don't really go to card shops or anything to play. I think Commander is a pretty, it's popular, but not super popular.
My local shop has a Commander play group, but they're like autistic people I used to know in high school, so I just don't go near them.
Yeah, well, that's also, I mean, there's also that's also a major issue with like the card shops and like board game shops and stuff, is the quality of people there usually are pretty wretched. and loathsome. So
yes, it really does range the gambit.
Yeah, it does. No, absolutely. So yeah, it's a hobby, a very light hobby. It's not something that I'm super devoted to, but with Ravnica coming back, I think this year, I did log on to with its Mythic spoiler to check out the cards and see if I wanted to add anything to my commander deck. So I did pick out a few cards, so I'm grateful for that.
I haven't checked Magic stuff in a long while, but the game itself, I would say, in terms of like casual games to play with friends, I'd say Magic is probably the best of all time.
No, I would agree. I think it's I don't know, there's something, it's easy to grasp, and it's also multifaceted enough so that depending that you can pick a very specific play style that is super agreeable to you. So it's not like multi-dimensional. I mean, like, you know, I have friends who are like super into like, you know, zombie decks or, you know, red and black vampire decks. I mean, many play styles, and there's so many variations to what you can come up with, especially like in limited with like commander. I mean, it's super, I mean, you know, I think everything except for like the first five or six editions is game you can pick from. So yeah, it's limited, I think is a really just great way to spend some time. You don't have to spend an inordinate amount of money, build a deck that's, you know, works the way that you want to play the game. And that's, I think, very rare, for any sort of game, say for like role player games and stuff like that.
Yeah. Magic does have a lot of very good modularity to it, but I think the other part of it that's really good is that it's multidimensional without actually requiring a lot of it's very deep, but it's also very very easy and accessible at its core. Unless you get way off into the weeds, like if you get really really into it, Magic can turn from very fun to very not fun.
Yeah, I remember sort of when I had my second wind, like just sort of YouTubing, you know, the best, you know, best decks of all time. And like,
listened to Talarian Community College?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah, that's some swim right there.
But I remember like watching this video of like this dude. He had like an artifact deck, and like he basically like was able to somehow like spend the, like, I think like on turn three, he was able to like take, you know, three additional turns, and he's just able to win just by sacrificing artifacts and playing artifacts. And
yeah. There's some
doing all these
stuff
things
in there.
Yeah. And it's just like that. That's just autism. Like I don't see any, fun in that. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean,
is awful. You played 40K, right?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much around the same time. I think I got into Magic and 40K around the same time. That would have been seventh and eighth grade.
Oh man, I'm so sorry. I mean, that was the time I did as well, but I wasn't super into Magic, so I wasn't spending a lot of money on it. But if you get into those at the same time, that's just like bad on the wallet.
Well, yeah, I think I did start working, I think, in seventh grade, and all of the money that I was making was going into, I really didn't spend. I mean, it's good because I really didn't spend money on Magic when I got into it because I was just playing with my cousin's cards.
Yeah, yeah.
But my first job, I was spending the entire paycheck on 40K models and paint and all that stuff.
That can get really expensive really fast. What'd you play?
I played Tau. It was Tau just came out.
That would have been third edition, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been like 2003, 2004, around that time.
Yeah, I tried to revive third edition during sixth edition, and that didn't work. So, sixth edition, and for anyone who isn't aware, was the single universally worst edition of any war game of all time, probably.
Yeah, it's funny because I was in I think I got out of Warhammer during the early years of high school for me. So I think it must have been
fourth or
seventh grade. Yeah. Yeah. And I kept up with it. Like I've read some of the novels. Some of them are pretty good. I keep up with the lore. I'll check. Was it ID4chan?
Yeah. 1D4chan is okay for some things, bad for others.
Yes.
The best part about 1D4chan is it's run by one dude who hates TG and who TG hates. So the traditional games world of 4chan, where they get a lot of their content, hates 1D4chan, and 1D4chan also hates TG. Mm. It's amazing.
Yeah, they're all right.
I've seen so many threads derail if somebody links to that wiki. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Pro tip, if you want to read Warhammer stuff on the cheap, just read the Warhammer wiki. Large portions of it are just copy-pasted, wrote text from anything they can get their hands on.
And I was lucky enough to find a lot of I think it's what's Dan Abnett. Yeah, I found a lot of his novels.
God bless his soul.
Yeah. I found a lot of his novels in PDF form. I was able to read Eisenhorn, and I didn't finish. I actually have to. I that's something that I want to read this year. Actually, is the successor series with the crippled Inquisitor? Who's
The cripple guy. That's not Eisenhorn. It's something or I forget. Somebody will yell at me. Yeah, Ravenor. Yeah. That's it. Ravenor. Have you read Gaunt's Ghosts?
I haven't. No, and that's also on my list to read.
You need to read those. I actually I didn't read them on PDF. I actually read them out of order because I was buying them for $2 at a used bookstore as they were coming in randomly. So I'd always scan the 40K section to see if there was something of Abnett's I didn't have. I was actually able to get second edition printings of all of the Eisenhorn books with the original cover art.
Nice.
In relatively good condition. For on the cheap.
Yeah. Those three novels are a lot of fun. I really, really like those Eisenhorn novels. Just on a literary, like, sort of pulp level, it's good fiction.
Abnett is an amazing writer. I mean, he's certainly lost his sort of edge as time has gone on. But back when he was cranking out Eisenhorn and Gaunt's Ghost, that was really like the heyday of his his best writing. And he really is the best of the 40K writers.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
I mean, the third edition Guard Codex was literally codified. Like, all of the lingo for the Guard, everything in the setting, he codified all that. He made up, like, every made-up word they use for radio, their fake cigarettes word, the low sticks, the recaf, all that stuff, that's all invented by Dan Abnett. He invented basically half that setting in Gaunt's Ghost. It's amazing how in-depth he went with all of it.
Hmm. Do you keep up with 40K like lore videos on YouTube?
I don't actually, largely because I'd rather spend my time listening to like waifu ASMR, if I'm honest.
Mm.
The other thing I don't really keep up with it because I don't like the way they're advancing the plot line in 40K. So I like to pretend in my mind that 40K is like somewhere between third and fourth edition. And I try not to think about Modern Games Workshop as much as possible.
Gotcha.
With the new Funko Pops.
Yeah. The one guy that I would I'm subscribed to a few. The only one that I actually would like highly recommend would be Luton09. He does some really high quality lore videos, and it's just, if you're not someone who is really interested or really knowledgeable about 40K, it's a really great way to just sort of get a feeling of you know, the universe and sort of the personalities involved and stuff like that. I would highly recommend him. Actually, he's someone that I do get notifications. I get push notifications for his shit whenever they come out.
Yeah, I would say. Oh, wait, you're not an arch Warhammer guy? What are you talking about? Would you hate English liberalism or something? What are you? Some kind of collectivist? No. I honestly, if somebody were to come to me and say, hey, Mongoose, what's the best source for a new guy learning 40K lore? I would just say, go listen to Political Science Theater 40K. That's all really good. They start at the Horus Heresy, which is not where I would personally start. But if you're going to do a podcast about it, I don't think you have much much of any other good choices. So I think they chose a good start. The only real problem with Political Science Theater 40,000 is that it's not released on a very regular schedule, which is unfortunate.
I was gonna say that, but then my show takes place once a month if I'm lucky. So I have no leg to stand on to.
Hey, we just got off a month and a half hiatus. Although I told everybody how long it was going to be and when I was going to be back, but
no, that's good. At least that's good.
Yeah.
Big props to with Walrus and
Roscoe Jones. Roscoe, of Exodus Americanus, another good program which you should be listening to.
I am a fan of their 40K. They do good stuff there.
That really is one of the better podcasts on that we actually have on in sort of the edgy internet sphere, and it really is probably the best 40K lore source in my opinion.
Mm.
They do really good work in that regard. That's really not Jack and I's end of things, so we don't really talk about 40K lore. But I am kept up to date on what's happening in the 40K sphere of things in sort of third hand and second hand through Jack, and what I see at my friendly local game store when I go there. I'm not too impressed.
Yeah, I don't like in terms of like recent 40K lore. I know that like the Ultramarines Primarch is back, and like the Eldar like made a new god or something.
He has an Eldar waifu or something. Yeah, it's nutty. It's turning into Gundam, but with like the game itself is turning into Gundam, but with like spiky weird knight things that look like dung beetles that walk on two legs. I don't like the knights. I hate them. They're disgusting looking. And that's not just my irrational hatred of walkers as a design speaking. I just don't like them. Bothers me greatly. They released a series of 9 models that all serve as the same dude, a lieutenant, but they're all monopose and they cost like $35 each.
And who are these models of?
Primaris Marines.
Oh, really? Interesting.
They're generic, but they're all monopose.
Huh.
Yeah. This incenses me to no end. Okay. If you're making a 15mm model, that monopose is fine. In fact, it's expected and good. But if you're making a 28mm model, if that's monoposed, I cannot. No, that's just evil. You're an evil person. I am not allowed.
Yeah, I've never really. I mean, again, it's, you know, the issue with Warhammer 40K is almost exclusively Games Workshop. I mean, they really are. I think they would be far more popular, and I think they would be, and I mean, despite sort of like their incompetence and sort of money grubbing, they still do have a pretty big niche audience. But I think they could be way more popular than they are. If they weren't such gluttons.
Yeah, they've sort of worked that out now, but the 40K itself is actually sort of broadening and it's becoming a much larger than it was. Because a lot of people through like sort of mainstreamification of quote unquote geek culture, quote unquote, I cannot really truly verbalize how much I loathe that term. But as that has become more mainstream, a lot of people are going into D&D and they're going into wargaming, but they all kind of stop at D&D and wargaming. So anything beyond like your very popular games isn't really being touched. But Warhammer is seeing a huge influx of sort of Reddit tier normies. I've actually heard people IRL, like not even in a games context, but like, you know, just sort of in meat space randomly, like spouting like 8-year-old 4chan memes about Warhammer.
Oh, that sucks.
It is disgusting.
I the last thing that I probably ever want to hear in my life is a Redditor shout in his fat, neck bearded way, blood
it's
for the
skinny
blood
fat
god, like
it's
that.
The skinny fat soy boy. Yeah. You get that.
Oh,
and then, you can go to a GW store and hear about how the Tau and the Harlequins are truly the good guys of the setting, and you can get lectures in Bernie Bro morality about how the Tau are the good guys.
I actually, or, well, I mean, as
Harley
I,
Quinn's are the good guys.
As I played, as I, it's funny that you mentioned those two because I played Tau. And if I would ever, if I ever had like the disposable income, to go back to it, I would definitely refurbish my Tau army, and I probably would get into the Harlequins too because I really do like them. It's very, but no, I wouldn't say that they're the. I would never argue that they're the good guys. That's
the Harlequins are the good. I've heard that one unironically before. You hear some really, the fan base has become just that, a fan base. It's no longer really a community or anything like that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I mean, I was Khaki Gang back in the day. I was Imperial Guard. I mean, I'm still Khaki Gang, but like Olive Drab, rise up.
Yeah. Yeah, I would play Imperial Guard again if I had the time, money, and inclination to go back to it.
Yeah, 40K. Sure, I would. Yeah, 40K kind of requires that. I mean, I've always sort of advocated, I think the best way to sort of get people out of this would just be like, you got to paint the miniatures to come play. But nobody's really willing to stamp their foot down on that. If you're not making progress on painting your minis week to week, you can't play.
Yeah.
Because that's just a very good barrier. It's a filter.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that.
But anytime anybody tries to do that, everyone starts shrieking about gatekeeping.
Well, that's all right. We need more gates. And more gatekeepers, let me tell you.
Yeah, we do. I'm a big fan of gatekeeping, this kind of thing. You play board games too, right?
A few, yeah. I have a friend, old friend from high school, who I still am in contact with, and he's pretty big into board games. But again, a lot like Magic, I'm very much casual. You know, I don't really go to card game stores or any of that stuff.
I don't really think you're like, you can claim like, I'm a competitive board gamer. Like, okay, guy, you're
well,
like,
I would say,
a little
I would
bit
say
of
like
a,
doing it every week. Like that's someone who's, you know, that's definitely like you're actively reorganizing weekly schedule to play, you know, a board game or something. That's definitely more dedication than someone like me, where I have a few, I might play it a few times a year. It's fun, but you know, sometimes my friends and I would rather just go out instead of sit at a dinner table and play a game for a few hours, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the last thing that anybody's ever going to get their hands on, like the normies, are the old board games, like the old Avalon Hill games, where it's like it's a 6-page rule booklet, but it's actually more dense than the average war game rule booklet and makes less sense. written in the archaic time of the 1970s before injection molded plastic miniatures had hit the scene yet. So you're playing with little cardboard cutouts that are flat on a hexagon space.
There's
it's
another
amazing
one too. I think it's Settlers of Catan.
Everyone loves that. I've never actually played Settlers of Catan.
No, neither have I. Like some of my sort of normie friends, like they've played it and they're fans of it. So I don't know. It might be fun. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah,
I'm very
much a risk for me to say, not for you to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, like a lot of things, it's like with board games specifically, like it has to be like I have to buy the premise. And the premise like almost always like has to be related to something that I find enjoyable in sort of another sphere of like culture or the arts or whatever. So like I'm like the only two board games that I own now, I'm gonna say for like, you know, like family stuff like Monopoly and Clue that I'm sure I have somewhere. But yeah, like I mentioned to you before recording, Betrayal at Hill House and Arkham Horror. Like those are the two games that I have. And I have like their expansions and all that stuff. And they're fun. But they're, you know, obviously Arkham Horror is very Lovecraftian. I'm a huge cosmic horror guy. Haunting in Hill House is very, obviously very sort of in that milieu as well.
I do believe it has a cosmic horror expansion, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I mean, it has like the great thing about that game is that like there are so many different sort of end steps, right? So
I've never actually played it, honestly.
Oh, you haven't?
No. I tend not to play a whole lot of board games.
No, I would definitely recommend it. It's actually a lot of fun. The premise of it is like you and your friends are basically exploring like an empty haunted house, and you're basically trying to like collect as many sort of items and stuff like that as possible. And as sort of the game progresses, you basically end up sort of situating yourself into a randomized sort of end step, which is totally like, I think the original game without the expansion has like probably close to 200 like sort of end challenges. It's thoroughly randomized, and it's really interesting because sometimes you have to, escape the house because one of your players is like turned, or zombies pop up or aliens pop up. I mean, it's thoroughly randomized. There are so many different sort of end challenges, and it's really cool. It's a really cool dynamic because the first 2/3 of the game, you're like working with everyone to, because you're all on the team and you're all just trying to strengthen each other up. And then the end step is, well, you're now the bad guy. One of your friends is the bad guy and you have to kill all your friends. So it's very interesting. I would highly recommend that board game. It is a lot of fun.
If Titus recommends it, it's got to be good, people. So if you haven't played it, be sure to go play it. I would honestly recommend, and this is something I'd recommend to anyone. It's got a very, very odd premise, but it's a game called Codenames. It was made by some Czechoslovakians. And then there are a bunch of expansions for, or different versions of it, kind of like there are for Monopoly, but the best one is the original version. And the way Codenames works, it's a four-player game, and you have two teams of two people. And you have a bunch of cards with words on them. And then you have there's a master card that sort of gives you a layout. And so you have a 5x5 grid of these cards with words on them. And then there's a hidden master card. And one person from each team goes and is able to see the master card. And on the master card, it sort of notes on the grid where the red team's spies are and the blue team's spies are. And then there's an assassin. And if anybody hits the assassin, it's game over.
Hmm.
So the way that works is you have a certain amount of spies on each team that they need to get. And the way they do it is you say a word as the guy who's viewing the card to try to get your teammate to associate one of the cards on the table with that word. And if he picks the right one, you place it, and then the first one to match up all their things wins. And while the premise isn't particularly in-depth or compelling, it's the gameplay where if you've got like four people you know really well, or your friends, and you've kind of got a rapport, and it's really good for like a family too. Like if you've like got like a mom, dad, and a sibling.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of fun because it's a very fast game, and it's a word matching game, kind of like apples to apples. And it's very vanilla. The original is, and it's not very, they make like an adult version, but honestly, if you need an adult version of that game to have fun, there's probably something wrong with you. Because like the normal one, it's just got like random cities people would know, like London, Istanbul, like Cairo, Berlin, and it's got like names of things like horse, carrot, potato, just random words. But it's a lot of fun trying to like come up with that. So I recommend that to everybody, and it's only like $20 on Amazon. You can get it real cheap, and it's just a ton of fun.
Huh. I'll have to check that out then. That's interesting.
That's probably my favorite board game. The only other ones I own are Avalon Hill Submarine and chess.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'm a very lonely person, so I own a game you can play solitaire, and I own a game you can play remotely with other people. The one remotely being chess. I wonder if anybody's ever tried like mailing like a famous convict like mail chess, because you can play it that way.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you can.
I wonder.
Someone should do that
this
for
project
Uncle Ted. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a project for Pine Tree Gang. We need to play chess with Ted Kaczynski collectively on Twitter. That would be an interesting exercise to see if I wonder, he'd probably be very good at it.
Oh, I'd imagine that he'd be great. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't want to be the guy to play against him.
No.
I like chess. It doesn't mean I'm great at it.
Yeah, it's been a few years since I've played.
I'd say that I was pretty good. Like the last time that I like played one of my friends, I did pretty well. But it's something that I haven't, unfortunately, haven't really played that much of recently.
It's something it doesn't occur to people to play it more often than not.
Yeah, no, that's true. I probably have a chess set somewhere. I'm not even sure if I do or not. That's interesting.
I own two. Huh. I actually have a small one that's magnetized that I can take with me, and I have one for my apartment. But my nice. my most common chess partner is actually my dad. It's a great father-son game. It's very good for that.
Yeah,
I learned it from my dad, and I finally got to be able to beat him.
Nice.
Actually, a couple years ago, and I was fairly proud of that.
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. No, but no, those are like, yeah. Again, board games are great, I think, because it's even if you're not playing them a lot, and again, I'm not super into them, but they're very good. Because a lot of them are just they're rather innocent. They're not very. It's very difficult to as you would say it, pause up or pause a board game.
Yeah.
Because of just its nature.
Yeah, I agree, and it definitely is like it definitely has like the connotations of like something to do with the family. I mean it's and that's definitely something that I think when I'm, you know, when I, fingers crossed, get to be a parent and the like, that's something that I think I will. Do a lot with my kids just because it's better to do that than watch TV or movies. So that's definitely a,
oh no. Yeah.
You know, so, and it's, you know, there's a really nice social dynamic to board games as well. I think a lot of people overlook, and don't really appreciate. So yeah, it's, I think board games will certainly, you know, thankfully, will always be with us. I can't imagine, especially as, you know, alienation and all that stuff ramps up with late capitalism. I definitely think board games will remain sort of a relevant means of distraction and entertainment. I think like they've had like, and again, it's maybe like the one good thing about like nerd culture and all that. Sort of gross that gross oeuvre of our society is that like it has had like a second renaissance.
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah, despite it being marketed towards, you know, really shitty, awful people, doesn't mean like that the games that they're playing aren't worth checking out.
Definitely. Yeah. The board games themselves are highly Germanic, actually, in extraction.
Hmm.
Yeah. The Germans are kind of like it's a Central European thing. You can actually look at like traditional games all kind of have their sort of origins, like civilian wargaming. Wargaming as played by civilians for fun was invented in England and remains really, really dominant in the Anglosphere. It's a white thing, but it's dominated by people that are in English speaking countries that are part of the Commonwealth. If you go to a wargaming forum and count up the flags, the vast majority of people that play war games are Australians, Canadians, English, and Americans. And then they're going to be some New Zealanders and then some South Africans. But that's just because of the small number of sort of white people in those countries. New Zealand because it's small, and South Africa because obvious reasons.
Because they're all getting killed.
Ow. Didn't need that reminder. But if you look at say board games, those tend to be sort of concentrated around Germanic populations. Actually, RPGs are more of a uniquely American thing, where that was kind of come up with by Americans and sort of foistered on everybody else. It's like it's a weird thing the Americans came up with, and everybody else sort of adopted it. Like the real first sort of steps in role playing games, traditional role playing games. Like D&D and stuff. That's all Americans.
Interesting.
But board games themselves are Central European in nature. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a very famous, and I forget the name of it. But it's a very famous German board game where, and it's sort of like the joke is like, what do Germans do for fun? They play a board game where it's basically them working, because I think it's like I forget sort of like the rules or like the objectives of the board game. I think it's about like them. Like, I think the premise of the game is like managing like a city, or something like that. But it's very German. It's just, it doesn't seem like fun. But I guess if you have that certain Teuton autism, that would be your deal.
Actually, Catan is German, and it is actually a game about sort of logistics and resource management.
Yeah.
When you get down to it. Those are very, it's a very like German sort of thing. Like, and you look at board games as a piece of entertainment. While the companies themselves are owned by, the element, the sort of alien elements, the games, remain rather that the people that are creating them on the whole are generally very, very, very sort of, traditional American stock types. It's very bizarre to me. Like games like Magic the Gathering, there's the creative team has sort of been being able to be changed. The people that are sort of inventing games remain white people. Mm. The guy who spearheads and invents something is always the white guy in that sphere. Always.
Yeah.
Hey, my co-host just jumped in. Jack. Jack, say hey.
Hello, hey. Jack. How's it going, Titus?
It's going well, man. It's going well. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Just had a nice planning session of Savage Worlds with my friend. So it was pretty nice.
Nice. Very nice.
So white people make games, huh?
Yeah, they do. As Super Lutheran famously said in episode 14, you know who invented sticks? White people. he conclusively proved that maids were actually a European ethnicity. very good times on that one. But no. Jack is my co-host. He's a big 40K guy and does a bunch of other stuff in terms of board gaming and such. And he's also my Tard Wrangler.
Very nice.
Everyone needs one, really.
Very true.
Never be without it.
Basically. Jack, do you have any questions for Titus?
I haven't really come prepared, unfortunately. I just wanted to jump in and say hello, and I enjoy your work.
That's white people for hello.
I love paradigm shift. How it's just gonna like people are gonna come in here and they're gonna be listening to this and be like, wow, this is really low energy. And then Jack joins, and then it's just everybody compliments Titus, and then they all leave.
No, but I will say though that my favorite bout of internet blood sports was way back in the day when CultureConf did their thing against like those three communists or something like that.
That was ages ago, man. That was back in 2015. That was 4 years ago.
Happened. I didn't even know that happened. That's amazing. I was still watching Stefan Molyneux in those times.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks. I'm happy that people remember that. That tickles me. That's great.
And it was back before internet blood sports became a thing. You guys were debating communists.
Yeah. Yeah. We really should have doubled down. I'm not entirely sure. Like, and that definitely was one of our more popular episodes too. I'm not entirely sure why we didn't do more of that.
Platforming.
Yeah, well this was way before any of that was like an issue. Back in the day, back in 2015, like we didn't have any issues like talking to or debating, you know, commies and all that stuff. I mean, it was the tenor of everything, I think, really changed with Trump being elected. That definitely ramped them into you know, definitely sort of shut down the our ability to you know, at least have a conversation with these people.
Yeah, you kicked the beehive.
Yeah, yeah. I wish we did more of that. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was. I had a massive amount of fun, and I was just listening. I was.
I honestly want to get on something with Arch Warhammer and just berate him. I know it's never going to happen. One of these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Maybe if we can, get into Andy Worski's thing, we can get a nerd debate between Arch Warhammer and us.
Call him out. If he has a Twitter account, man, just call him out. And
I do occasionally. He never responds. Of course, I've got like, I'm like 156 follower nobody who's like on there occasionally, like posting about whatever I'm posting about.
Monster yeah. Girls. It's all right.
Basically, yeah, yeah. See, I managed to go this entire time with that esoteric hentai discussion because I was like, ah, we're not going to do that because that's like what the meme would be, but we're just not going to do it. But yeah, I guess we're legally obligated to do it. So yeah, no.
Now you two intersect, though, at Monster Girl thighs, correct?
Yes, that is
if
true.
The Monster Girl possesses thighs, theoretically, then you would intersect. I mean... inarguably
true.
The most patricate of the waifus is the Lamia.
Yeah, but I would agree with that. I would in terms of Monster Girls, I definitely think the Lamia is top notch. I'm not super knowledgeable about Monster Girls. It's not really my thing, but I have read the manga, the famous manga Monster Mezume or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's very cute, very funny, and Mia is definitely the best girl.
I actually agree, which is actually not the popular opinion. Unfortunately, no, Mia is not the favored one.
Who's the favored one?
People generally like she out of the few people generally choose, she is like the least favored out of like the spider's actually more popular by my perceptions.
Spider would be my second pick.
Hell no, I don't like the spider at all.
Now is this because the Lamia is basically all thigh from the waist down, and B, because the spider actually has eight thighs.
Well, yeah, that would be it exactly. I definitely am. And they have and their bodies, their human bodies start with the tummy, which is also a fetish
right.
of mine. So
it's
tummies and thighs all day.
Every day. I'm thinking, okay, so if you look at the Lamia though. And you look at it from sort of the perspective of the perennial Avonlian tradition, the Lamia actually requires the body heat of her mate and his sort of solar energy in that sense, metaphorically speaking. Mm. So from an Avonlian perspective, the Lamia sort of mimics the sort of Aryan pair bonding in the caste system, wherein the caste and sustenance would be cast upon the wife by the husband, thus making it the most patricate of the waifus.
I would agree. Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, I mean, you also have to look into the hermetic tradition and sort of like the signifier of snakes as a sign of knowledge and wisdom. So people who pick snake girls clearly are the smartest. So there you go. That's
yeah.
the hermetic tradition passed down through us.
I mean, I'm a Kikimora guy, but the snake girl I acknowledge is the most patricate of the waifus.
Just, I don't know. I don't like know like the mindset of anyone who pick the big-breasted centaur. I'm sorry.
That would be like second or third for me, honestly.
Obviously,
really?
That's
yes.
obviously, that's the imposition of the will in the Nietzschean.
yeah, I've never heard Nietzschean and horse pussy in the same sentence before. That's this is we're breaking new territory here, fellas. This is
what were you expecting? You know the kind of you've seen my blog post.
It's true.
We just exist to give you more content for your Twitter feed. Really.
Oh, geez, Louise. Well, thank you, boys. That's my waifu is an eldritch god, so I definitely have that.
That's a hard that's a hard yikes from me, chief.
Yeah, well, you can't beat like a literal goddess who sucks, you know, your soul
you know, out. So that's it's hard to beat. It's hard to beat. I'll be doing more Chio content. I like that. That's good stuff.
You heard it here first, folks.
I have some things I need to link you for Twitter. Mm. Shall we? Yeah.
Please do. Oh,
so we're talking about like games and stuff, right?
Yeah, we were. Okay, no,
originally,
we're
yeah,
we're quote unquote world building. Jack, you haven't learned this lesson yet.
Oh,
I
right,
can talk
right.
about whatever I want to on the traditional games podcast as long as I claim it's for the purposes of world building.
That's right. I apologize. See, this is something he's teaching me.
And by teaching, Jack is trying to get me back on track, and I'm desperately trying to resist because this conversation is way too much fun not to have.
see, Titus, that's something you didn't realize is that you are actually in a Chimera Stellatum right now, just of something that is beyond horror.
That's my jam.
When you think about it, you can't categorically disprove the premise that the universe exists inside of some Vorfag's waifu's stomach.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That definitely
so
is.
So by extension, this makes V an elder god.
Oh no. Well, I think that would definitely prove Gnosticism correct, that the physical plane of existence has to be destroyed. And we should all ritualistically just fade onto the next ethereal realm because this world isn't worth fighting for. But if V is in any ways a divine being, then we're fucked, fellas. So
oh jeez, in more ways than one, unfortunately. Oh jeez,
yes, in more ways than one. Yes, in some ways, the worst ways.
See, I continue to think that I can't do like more and more cursed content, but I continually outdo myself in terms of cursed things that I end up either getting myself involved in or end up saying.
That's good. That's good though. You'll have a bright future on Twitter, my friend. This is good.
I hope so.
That's where everything's going anyways, I think. I think the whole content-wise, Twitter content-wise, I think it all has to revolve around sort of semi-ironic, dead serious nihilism, but playing it totally for laughs. And that's definitely
that is kind of the direction things are heading. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, especially when Kamala Harris becomes our next president. So,
I can't wait to like, hey man, Titus, bring your EDH deck to the FEMA camp. We can play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this goes out to the audience. If you want to play like a game with me, don't worry. I'll have plenty of time to DM all the games we can play in the FEMA camps.
Yeah. Yeah. limited only, cuz there won't be any standard left, cuz everyone will be in jail.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just come up with our own rules. We'll get some rocks and carve dice out of them. We'll make up some games.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, you've heard of chess, but can you play checkers for the millionth time? Carved out in the dirt? Oh, jeez. No, I'm actually, honestly, in a serious note, I'm really terrified of something like that happening because I really don't want to go to a FEMA camp. I no, don't want to have to explain like my esoteric waifu posts to the FBI.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to. Like I want to,
but at the same time I'm like I don't want to like give my woke takes on that. I don't.
Yeah. It's just because I've been operating within like this mindset for such a long time, like, and I definitely am like on a watch list, and I'm sure there's some FBI goon, you know, keeping track of what I do and say. It does make me chuckle that it's just a never ending stream of like, you know,
anime
tweets
thighs.
About me wanting to get strangled by thighs and like
Houghton Geki
hentai
pictures.
Tummies like this. Well,
okay,
yeah, this
I,
is,
I have to, I have to
new...
ask, was I the one who put you on Houghton Geki, or were you already on that train when I linked it to you?
Let me see. Houghton Geki?
Yeah. Houghton Geki. That's the best source of elf pictures you could ever ask for.
Oh, you know what, dude? I actually was using Denburo for that.
Oh, okay. 80% of TG thread starters come from that dude. That's the only reason I know this.
This guy's the elf teacher. Yeah, these are great.
Yes, that's him. I was surprised when you posted that. I'm like, I linked him to that. He must have seen that.
Yeah, this is. I'm a fan of this.
You're gonna have a bottomless well of Toho and elf pictures from now
on. Yeah. Very nice. I need to do more elf no state stuff.
Yeah, I need to write more articles. That article actually did better than the episode of Little Wars we released next to it in terms of page views.
Well done.
To my and Jack's chagrin, like.
Well, I definitely want to get into to more esoteric hentai posting. I think that definitely is an avenue for content that hasn't been thoroughly
exploited.
Tapped yet.
Yeah, there's exploited.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Strike while the wheat is growing. Harvest while the iron's hot, as it were.
Yes.
No. Geez, it's just nutty. Twitter has. I've been on Twitter for a while now, and it's just become a way weirder place.
Mm.
I was actually like, I think the real dividing line for people that are on Twitter was, were you on Twitter before Space Geeko got doxxed, or were you after?
Yeah, that definitely is a big dividing line.
I was on there before that, and I remember when that happened.
I probably shouldn't admit this publicly, but I was with Lucas. We were mutuals. And I didn't jump on the immediate bandwagon of like denouncing him, because like I DM'd him when I think it was Napoleon.
And Napoleon was the guy who had it out there.
Yeah, and I DM'd Lucas after I saw that, and he assured me that wasn't the case, and that, you know, he isn't, you know, a pedophile and stuff like that. And so I stayed quiet. And then Lucas lied to me. Definitely a pedophile. It's been Twitter gold ever since, though. That man and his nipples and his room.
Oh geez. Yeah, I want Lucas forever. Room I want a Lucas Room themed set of dice to play D&D with.
There's a really good painting that I'm actually gonna buy about of Lucas Room. It's actually really good. It's just a painted image of him with his nips in his room, but like his face has been like distorted beyond belief, and it really is. I mean, it's one of the most gruesome paintings. I mean,
now,
he gives
this
Kevin
is
Bacon.
Content.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. He gives Kevin Bacon and who's that other really big sort of horror painter? Yeah, his name's escaping me now. Giger. He gives them a run for a money, because it really ups the ante in terms of just existential dread. That room is something else, man. Then there's something ethereal about that room. It isn't just a room.
I'm convinced that the Lucas Room isn't of itself like a state of being, a sort of transcendental sort of metaphysical state that if you are in the Lucas Room, you have you've sort of, it's a cursed location. It's a transcendental place.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's purgatory. Is. Like if I was a Catholic and somebody asked me to describe purgatory, I'd be like the Lucas Room.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Oof. It is a place that I hope to never find myself, let me tell you.
Everyone kind of has beige-ish walls in the right lighting, now that I think about it.
You don't have like the vomit green sort of extensions to that room. That's good.
No, yeah, I don't. I also don't have a rotting computer chair. that really
or
ties
dirty laundry
together.
On the bookcase. There's everything about that.
I would never put my dirty laundry on a bookcase. Let me tell you, I don't actually happen to own a bookcase at the moment, which is unfortunate.
Wow.
I keep all my books in a cardboard box next to my desk.
Oh, that is unfortunate.
Yeah,
it is unfortunate. I have two bookcases. And I have numerous piles because I have way too many fucking books. So that's a yikes. I need more.
I need more.
You put some RPG source books on your bookcases, Titus. They look good. They're nice and colorful.
I believe it. I have one. I have a lore book for RPG. And do I? I'm not sure. I think I have a third edition Warhammer 40K rule book somewhere, too. Nice. Somewhere in that endless mess. Oh.
You need to get you know what? You need to get made RPG. You would like that.
Hmm.
Yes. It even has random tables. You can use it to make Twitter content.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
1d6 on the perversion table.
Oh, geez. Are we doing this again? Like, this is like the content. Well, have Jack and Mongoose come run out of content. If yes, site made RPG begin shit posting. That's like an NPC subroutine right there.
Well, I'm Mongoose, just because I do give you a shout out, because Hotengeki, that elf teacher, isn't the only. There's more pictures of her, so I'm eternally...
Yes, that's like a... I remember I was in a Tej thread one time, and they were actually arguing as to what the nature of his OCs were, because he's extremely vague about them.
Mm.
So people are arguing about what their personalities are, and it's like the most autistic thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's... But this girl, this is a fine specimen. I'm going to be using more of her. The Elf No State is coming back, fellas. I'm going to be tweeting this out at work, and I hope I don't get caught. But
what was it? The new
yet.
Axis of Evil, the Trap Republic, the Monster Girl Elf No State, the Elf No State.
Yes. Those are the that's the
and
new.
We need like some other people, because I feel like the Trap Republic is probably like Romania, and the Monster Girl Elf No State is probably like Hungary.
Mm. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
We need like TikTok cosplayer No State as like Japan. No, I don't know. Somebody who's funnier than me needs to come up with this. I'm not good at that. Anyway.
No, that's good.
I don't know. This has gone like way off into the weeds. I thought it was bad when Borzoi and I had a 10-minute whole 10-minute sort of digression about Ted Kaczynski, and we've just gone like full on
20 minutes about hentai. Yeah.
20 minutes of hentai.
Well, the quality of your show is indicative of the quality of your guest, I'm sorry to say.
I don't know. I mean here's the thing, it's like we've got like maybe what, a dozen, two dozen fans at the best. So like
there you go.
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody's probably gonna listen to this and be like, Mongoose, what'd you even do? Why'd you do this? Be like, I don't know, I don't care. If you think you can do better, why don't you come on here and talk to me?
Because we can. That's the reason why whenever I'm asked why do I post what I post, it's because I can. The ultimate power move. I force trad cats to look at big titted elves and traps. Like, there is nothing more enjoyable in my day than forcing them to retweet my content and my jokes. It's
dunking on trad cats is wholly endorsed by Lutheran gang. You have,
yeah,
our
they're
support.
All right, but you know.
No, I like them, but you know.
They do get dunked on. I'm gonna dunk on them. Sorry to say.
Never resist a good infight, you know, honestly. I mean, I don't like fighting, but if somebody's gonna infight with me, I never resist. I had a 2-day-long argument with some dude about a T-34 tank once. This is a very good fun time. Unfortunately, I can't go back and find anything on Twitter because I just delete everything after 2 weeks. It's gone.
Do you use tweet delete?
I always do. Yes.
Yeah. Good for you, man.
I'm probably paranoid about my content. So, well, I don't know. I don't even think tweeting is tweeting content. Is anything really content at the end of the day?
Everything is content. Well, thanks to postmodernism, everything is content and nothing is content. So
yes, in a roundabout way, if we literally just recorded ourselves playing a board game over the internet.
Oh, it's definitely content. Dude, go on YouTube and, you know, search, you know, P
people playing board games, man. You'll find videos.
Oh yeah, no, there are people that stream themselves playing D&D. That's something I want to do at least once. Is I want to run a game where we record it, like edgy right wing D&D. We can do Critical Role better than Critical Role. We won't have annoying women. It'll just be edgy people.
It's funny, dude. It's funny that you mentioned that, because we were going to do that. I was going to do that with Soap Merchant and Kathy Princess from Darwin Digest before they sort of had to they went into the ether. They sort of quit everything.
Hey, I'll hit you up when I start looking for people. I'm going to put on an application open to anybody.
Hmm.
I'm an edgelord egalitarian. I don't care who you are. If Patrick Little wants to submit an application, I will read it and look at it.
No.
I can't wait. You run into a goblin nest. Half the party's like, "Oh yes, they're Jews. We have to get them." And then the other half is like, "No, they're Arabs. They might be okay."
Yeah. I want to see if they're wise to the JQ, fellas. Hold on one second. Let me tell goblin.
My biggest problem is I've actually run D&D for our guys before, and you actually like kind of have to explicitly say we're not going to replay the Turner Diaries, but in medieval fantasy land. I don't want to do that. It's not fun. I also never use goblins ever. Just as a general rule, just don't use goblins. It's too much it fries people's brains.
Yeah,
If you're an edgelord, you can't handle the idea of something having a long nose anywhere, period, and not being subject to all of the
I don't even like the dwarves are Jewish meme that a lot of people sort of buy into. With Tolkien, like the whole like, oh, the, you know, oh, dwarven is based in Hebrew, so they're automatically Jewish. God damn it. Shut the fuck up. Like, just enjoy the setting.
Honestly, I play it kind of down the middle, because Tolkien's dwarf names are all taken from Norse mythology, but the language is Hebrew, and he sort of is, I don't know if he said it explicitly, I think he might have at some point, that their fatal flaw was that they sought wealth to their own detriment, oftentimes attracting dragons, which is like, you know, it's an interesting take, okay? Like Tolkien was I think he was woke if you read it.
When you've been kicked out of 109 mountains.
It's not the mountains. Oh no. I think the best way to read Lord of the Rings, or one of the more interesting ways, is as simply a fantastical retelling of Lothrop Stoddard. But honestly, I think the dwarves are best told as sort of you got to play them down the middle. They're isolationists. They're sort of greedy. They'll screw people in trade. But at the end of the day, like, they're not invasive. That's the thing you should keep in mind about Tolkien dwarves. That's different from our sort of real life, quote unquote, dwarves, right? Is that they're not invasive. They keep to themselves, and they're actually productive. They carve things. They make things. They
great
make contraptions.
Yeah.
Right. And sure, they're going to screw you on steel ore prices or iron ore prices and steel. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, but a Spaniard might screw you because you're a Frenchman in trade. So, you know, whatever. That's kind of the way I run them is you kind of got to, like, again, if you're going to run a game and if you're going to run D&D, and let's say you've got a bunch of R guys playing, you really kind of have to be moderate about it. Because if you go over the top, it's just not fun, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think I've always had a really big issue with the stultification of like ideology, that there is something to say. And it isn't just with like far right. It's indicative of really every person who cares deeply about politics. There is sort of a limiting factor, either with like speech or just with creativity. And this is something that like I don't know if I went around about it like the correct way, but like I've gone pretty hard against, like, you know, just like sort of the language of sort of like the old sort of like old school, like TRS, you know, goys and fashy and all that stuff. Yeah. It's like, it's cringe and stupid now, but I think linguistically speaking, it actually like limits
your ability to sort of comprehend and understand reality. And I never really like spoken like deeply about my criticism of that. It was always just sort of based on like snark what might be conceived as pettiness. I don't think so, but people might say that it was me being petty and nasty. But yeah, I think in terms of like anyone who cares deeply about politics and views politics will end up viewing culture through that lens. And I think that's just really, it's unfortunate. I mean, I don't think there's any way of stopping that. But I think it's something that more people should be aware of.
You can always enjoy something continually as long as you just like add continual layers of irony on top of something. Mm. See, that's the thing is I've just sort of decided I like what I like and I'm not going to stop liking it no matter what. I'm not going to stop using my, if something gets old, I'm still going to drive it into the ground. I don't care. I've gone beyond that, you know?
Yeah, same here.
I'm just going to be sincere about it. And honestly, I don't really fault people for because I see like the continued use of sort of tried and true linguistics as sort of a form of sincerity on my end personally. And this is probably a discussion for something that's not going to be like published or anything like that. But I do see it as a form of sincerity. And as such, I don't really care about it all that much. Mm. I may not like certain ways of being in certain words. And I'm sure there are things I like that you don't like. And I'm sure there are things you like that I don't like. But again, it really is just a form, in my opinion, it's a form of sincerity.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. That's a fair point. And it's not something I really like. It's not something that
I know. We should talk about this some other time, but
yeah. Yeah. I don't harp on it that much. I did basically a story for the trough, what was it called? Self-actualization and its disconnects, where it basically just is sort of my like parody of just the limiting factor of speech. But yeah, I mean, that's, and like after I did that story, I was basically, yeah, okay. I've said what I had to say. I made the all the necessary jokes. I'm fine. You know, so I don't really harp about it that much. I mean, again, I sort of have devolved or ascended depending on your point of view, just to humor. I basically, that's all I want to do now is just make jokes and make people laugh.
Long story short, I honestly believe that everyone should unironically still use January 4th, 1988 as their sock account's birthday. Still. I don't care. I don't care that it's like played out and tired and old. It's funny to me. I don't care.
Well, what is old can become new again.
That's true.
Time is a flat circle.
That is true. That is true.
I remember yelling that at some drunk people watching a football game one time, and they got like really into it. yeah. Anyway, so we've like gone like way into the weeds, but basically I think the core of what we're saying is that you should play these games at least on a casual level, because it's good it requires face-to-face interaction, or it forces it in a way to really truly experience the game. It forces face-to-face interaction in a way that is positive. You're not necessarily like building something, but you're building relationships in a way, and that's really the core of what I'm talking about here is and what I'm trying to, my ultimate goal for all of what I'm doing on here is I'm trying to convince people slowly that you should try and do these things in real life with other people, you know. Go have friends. Borzoi talks about the Mannerbund principle, which, you know, I get, and that's something I like. And that's what I'm trying to build as an extension, is you need to like find common ground. And if that's a game, go do that. And that's why I think you need to. And even then, like even on the internet, I still think it's useful. It's useful as a bonding exercise and all that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it definitely spurns on. I mean, you know, a lot of the games that we talked about, at least today, definitely spurns on sort of your creative side, which is definitely something that I'm a huge proponent of, is getting people to think differently and to sort of work that side of the brain that unfortunately our society does everything in its power to stultify. So, if you have your, if you have friends who are interested in spending $100 maybe on a EDH commander deck for Magic, yeah, give it a look. It might be something that you you'd enjoy.
It doesn't even have to be that complicated. I'm sure one of you or your friends owns a deck of like normal playing cards. If you want to spend like the $10 on the old Savage Worlds rulebook, if you want to go do something to find a game, like that's fine by me. Just don't do anything illegal. That I'm just going to say that. Just don't do anything illegal.
Absolutely.
Yes. Don't do illegal things, but go read your RPG rulebook, shoot your local goblins in the RPG, drink health potions, and move to the equatorial jungle in your setting. And hail the dark gods.
or we can do all that at the FEMA camp, which I'm sure we will all invariably
find ourselves. Wait.
Thanks to you saying that. So thanks a bunch, Mongoose. Man, I hear the sirens now.
Yeah. Honestly, you know what? I can't wait to. I'm gonna meet all you guys in the FEMA camp. We can play Dungeons and Dragons. It's gonna be great. Honestly, it won't be that bad. You know, when you think about it in a roundabout way,
just
we'll
just
all get to meet each other.
I can imagine
Titus is walking in with a bunch of like paper clipped together slips of paper, and they're looking at him like, you printed off how many waifu pictures?
Just enough to get me through the day, officer.
No, I'd imagine you'd take them in there so you could sort of tack them to things to still force the trad cats to look at the traps.
Oh, I absolutely would. Yeah. No, I'd post them. I post them all around the FEMA camp.
All around
to the annoyance camp of all and to the humor of few. So that's that'll be good. That'll be fun. We'll have
anyway,
fun.
Anyway, well, we'll be seeing you guys in the FEMA camp. So this has been another Little Wars dispatch from the FEMA camp, I guess. So yeah, it was nice talking to you, Titus, and it's always a pleasure to have you on if you ever want to come on again, although I don't know if you want to.
I had fun. I had a lot of fun.
If you ever need more esoteric bullshit, I'm around.
Palate cleanse.
There you go.
Yes, but so we'll see you guys in the FEMA camp. This has been Little Wars Dispatch. Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
I think that went pretty well.
Yeah, that was fun.